This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins me live in studio, local author, cartographer, and historian. He's online at rickbritton.com. And number one, thank you for being here. And number two,
oh, you're welcome.
Before we go anywhere,
yeah.
You were listening to my conversation with Bob Holdsworth, and he mentioned the bust of Stalin that is now at the D-Day Memorial.
Yeah, I hadn't read anything about it. It's an interesting story. I would encourage the folks out there, down there in Bedford, to keep the bust of Stalin. I think, you know, from my point of view, it's all about context. And the World War II Memorial is a military memorial. It's not a political or moral memorial. So the sacrifice of the Russian army and the Russian people in defeating the Nazis in World War II is at least 80, 90 times greater than the American sacrifice.
What are those numbers? American
lives, it's approximately 250,000, a quarter of a million. Certainly, you know, a huge loss in life, but it's way over 20 million in the Russian army and the Russian people. So, from my point of view, if it's there and it causes just a few people to look up the Russian contribution to defeating the Nazis in World War II, then it's a good thing to have it there. It's a military memorial. It's not a political memorial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 20 million people, 20 million Russians died during World War II?
Well over 20 million.
I had no idea.
I saw the figures a long time ago, and I know recently there was an article where they've been upped tremendously. It might be 25 million, but it's just an insane number of people lost their lives. Now, we're talking not just about the Russian army, but the Russian people. I mean, they employed tactics like scorched earth, where to deny whole regions to the Nazis because of the grain or whatever, they'd just burn everything to the ground and move the people out. So the Nazis would capture it, but would benefit nothing. You know, the sacrifice of the Russian people was just immense in World War II.
Goodness gracious, yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So let's turn our attention to 2011 is the 150th anniversary of the beginning of the Civil War.
Yeah, 1861. Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot going on in Virginia then, I would imagine.
Starting next year. Yeah. Yeah. Let's hope, and a lot more tours.
Yeah.
Come on down, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we need
come on down.
America to come to Virginia, of course, because Virginia is where most of the Civil War was fought, right?
Yeah, 60%.
60% of the battles.
At least. Yeah.
Fought here in Virginia. And that's what we're doing with you, is sort of counting down these battles. You can check out my last conversation, the podcast with Rick Britton, where we looked at the first two. Now, originally, I had asked you for like the top 15, but we're up to 24 now.
We're up to 24, and I think I can hold it at 24. What happened when...
Yeah, throw in one more and make it a 25.
When last we spoke, we were up to 19. And then I realized, as I started thinking about the criteria, I realized that certain things had to be included that I wasn't including. Like, for example, I wanted to include more battles that highlight the African-American participation in the Civil War. I wanted to include more cavalry battles, and we've got the two largest now in the Civil War, so that's part of the criteria. We weren't doing anything relative to the guerrilla war. And so what I did was I added in a few more actions, and some of them are kind of obscure, but what they are is they're representational of the larger picture. So in talking about this one specific thing, like, for example, the Fairfax Courthouse raid, we can pay honor to, we can talk about the importance of the guerrilla war.
Yeah,
especially in Northern Virginia. And I did the same in some other areas. So we kind of cover all the bases this way.
Well, that makes sense, because if we're talking about the most important battles of the Civil War fought in Virginia, then it would make sense to include some of these things that are emblematic of what else was going on.
Exactly, emblematic. So why don't I go through the new 24? Since last time I spoke, there were only 19. And then we'll go back and we're at number three, I think.
We're going to be at number three because we've talked about the first two in the last conversation. And you have these listed in chronological order.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Okay. What's the list?
So here we go. So it's First Manassas, the Monitor versus the Virginia, or the CSS Merrimack, Fort Darling, also known as Drury's Bluff, Seven Pines, also known sometimes as Fair Oaks, Cross Keys and Port Republic, Gaines's Mill, Malvern Hill, Second Manassas, Fredericksburg, the Fairfax Courthouse Raid, Chancellorsville, Brandy Station, the Wilderness, Spotsylvania, New Market, Cold Harbor, Trevilian Station, The Crater, and this one goes by many different names. We'll get to it eventually. Chaffin's Farm, Fort Harrison, New Market Heights, Cedar Creek, Fort Stedman, Five Forks, Sailor's Creek, Appomattox Courthouse.
We're talking with Rick Britton. We're looking at the most major, the biggest battles, the most important.
Most
not
important,
the biggest.
Right, they're not the biggest.
Not the biggest, but the most important, most significant battles of the U.S. Civil War that were fought here in Virginia. Last week we talked about the First Manassas and the Monitor versus, not the Merrimack, because it wasn't called the Merrimack at the time, even though that's how we were taught it in school.
Right.
It was actually called the Virginia
the
at
Virginia.
The time.
Newspaper men called it the Merrimack because it has that alliterative quality, Monitor versus the Merrimack.
But it was actually the
nice
Virginia,
right.
Monitor versus the Virginia. So we are on number three. Take us to May 12th, 1862.
Well, number three is the Battle of Fort Darling, also called Drury's Bluff. And the reason I added this in is, if you'll remember, the last one was a naval battle. This is another naval battle, so I wanted to have more than just one naval battle in Virginia. And what happened was the Virginia, the CSS Merrimack, was scuttled as the Confederate forces retreated up the Virginia Peninsula toward Richmond. And interestingly enough, before they scuttled it, they removed the cannon, and the crew took the cannon and mounted it at Fort Darling, which is atop Drury's Bluff. And Drury's Bluff is south of Richmond on a great curve of the James River. And it sits up on a bluff, as the name implies, looking down on the curve, completely commands the river. So on May 12, 1862, a Union flotilla, including the Monitor and including another ironclad, the Galena, and several other vessels came up the James River to try to get to Richmond, but they were denied access to Richmond mainly because of the guns of the former Virginia and the former sailors of the Virginia firing down from them, and it's called plunging fire. They couldn't actually elevate enough to even reach the fort, so the fort was in a perfect place. The reason I included this was I thought it was interesting that it was the crew and the cannon from the Virginia that ended up stopping the Monitor and other ships from getting up to Richmond. But the importance is, of course, it would have been a different story if they were able to sail all the way up to Richmond and bombard the Confederate capital. That would have been a sorry day in Richmond.
Did they sink anything?
They didn't sink anything, but the plunging fire penetrated a number of the vessels, and so the Union fleet had to retire back down the James River. So it's a Confederate naval victory at Fort Darling on May 12, 1862.
And a very early attempt by the Federals to take Richmond, right?
To get to Richmond,
because this
via
preceded
the water.
This preceded the right. Pennsylvania the Peninsula campaign,
it
right?
It did. The Peninsula campaign is just a little bit later on the same month.
Wow, so that really was the plan then on the part of Washington, was we're going to get to Richmond, we're going to come up through the water or up from Williamsburg. And
Sure.
That was, I guess, the most direct, easiest route.
Right, especially considering that the direct route they had failed at earlier at First Manassas the year before.
To so come down through northern Virginia.
Right,
yeah.
So now they're going to try the other route, and the other route is up the peninsula, and it's a lot easier because it's easier to transport the troops and all of the war material via the Potomac River and the Chesapeake down to Fortress Monroe. That's a lot easier, and you can do that unimpeded. Now, so that's number four. Now, that's number three.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about this.
Yes.
What are they firing from this cannon up there on these boats down there?
They're firing a solid shot. They're firing...
like a big cannonball?
Uh-huh. They're firing shells. Some of the solid shot that they're firing weigh as much as 20, 40 pounds. You can imagine that thing at close range.
These balls.
Uh-huh. Solid balls, solid
these
shot.
These balls, when they hit the boat, they don't explode, do they, or do they?
If it's a shell, it's supposed to explode. So that's the difference between solid shot and a shell. A shell is a hollow shell, and there's powder and sometimes other smaller solid shot inside.
So,
and the idea of that is that explodes.
So when that hits something hard enough, it breaks the shell and the stuff inside explodes?
No, it has a fuse, a timing fuse on it. So you set the time as to how soon it's supposed to explode. And hopefully you're going to do that accurately so it explodes where you want it to.
I would imagine there were a lot of accidents
those
with that
things,
stuff.
Yeah, and those things were really faulty. I mean, the manufacturing of that was really inaccurate. So those things were seldom all that accurate. Yeah.
But the solid shot, the cannonballs, would just knock holes or knock a mast down or whatever.
Yeah, hopefully, hopefully. But and with plunging fire, it's really dangerous for the people on those vessels, you can imagine, especially since they couldn't elevate their guns to reach the fortress above them.
So they're just blindly shooting into the fort.
It's like ducks in a barrel.
Yeah, so they had to turn around. Was it a morning raid? Were they coming up in the morning?
It was midday. Now, I want to mention also that it wasn't just Fort Darling, but they had extended a boom. They had actually extended a chain across the river. So this is one way of stopping vessels from getting up your river is you extend a chain across the river.
And to block the boats.
So that's going to trap somebody that tried. Yeah, it's going to stop them. So they also had a chain across the river.
I had no idea. I had never heard of this.
And they sank some old derelict vessels to block the channel. I mean, they were determined to stop them from getting to Richmond. But if it hadn't been for this successful fight, the vessels could have sailed up to Richmond and bombarded the city. That would have looked kind of bad.
Yeah, because this is very early in the war. I mean, you're only a year in, right?
Yeah, it's the second spring of the war. Yeah.
Interesting. We're talking with Rick Britton. He's online at rickbritton.com. We're looking at the most significant battles of the Civil War fought here in Virginia. And I do believe we are up to number four. Is that right? Number four.
We are. We're up to number four. And it's the Battle of Seven Pines, also called Fair Oaks, fought on May 31st, June 1st, 1862.
So now, this is a couple weeks later.
This is just a few weeks later. And it's the second battle of the Peninsula campaign of any good size. I left one out because Williamsburg wasn't all that important. It didn't really change anything. Seven Pines, though, changed a lot. Seven Pines was the first major battle just outside of Richmond. So here's what had happened. McClellan, against the objections of some of the other military advisors and against the objections of Abraham Lincoln, decided to move the Army of the Potomac, over 100,000 men, down to Fortress of Monroe and move up the peninsula against Richmond. So the peninsula in Virginia, if you're not a Virginian, the peninsula is the strip of land between the James to the south and the York River to the north. Now, the only way he would get Lincoln to agree to this is if he left another 50,000 men guarding Washington. So, as he moved up the peninsula against Richmond, the 50,000 men under Irving McDowell, the man actually who had lost the Battle of Manassas, was supposed to move down to Fredericksburg, and eventually those two forces outside of Richmond would link up. Now, what happened was, as McClellan got closer and closer to Richmond, if you can picture just for a moment the Chickahominy River. The Chickahominy River rises to the northwest of Richmond, cuts across North Richmond almost laterally, going west to east, and then just east of Richmond, cuts to the southeast and then joins the James River. So the Chickahominy posed a problem to McClellan as he was advancing against Richmond. So initially, just before this battle, what he decided to do was send a small force across the Chickahominy directly at Richmond, and send about three quarters of his men along the Chickahominy, trying to inch their way to get around Richmond's northern flank, if you follow me. Now, the whole reason behind that was he had to have a force on the northern side of the Chickahominy to cooperate with that other 50,000-man force that was coming down from Washington, D.C. And the idea was they would join. It would be well over 150,000 men just outside of Richmond, the capital of the Confederacy. And hopefully, knowing the way McClellan thought, hopefully if he did everything perfectly right, because he was a perfectionist, they would fight one battle, and that would be one monstrous battle, and that would be the end of the Civil War. Richmond would fall. He'd be the hero. Let's see. Let's extrapolate a little bit more. He'd run for president and be president for two terms.
That was his plan.
That was his plan. Yeah, actually, he wanted to be dictator, not just president,
really?
but dictator.
So
yeah,
McClellan,
he wrote to his wife that he was the power in the land and that one day he could certainly be dictator. If you read some of the letters to his wife, the man was a megalomaniac. The man was just off his rocker.
So McClellan's leading these troops up the peninsula.
Up the peninsula, right.
And of course, they fight in Williamsburg.
They fought a battle at Williamsburg. It's a holding action on Joseph E. Johnston's retreat up the Virginia Peninsula. Now, on the other side, we've got Joseph E. Johnston, and he's commanding the Confederate force. And he retires across the Chickahominy. He gets into to the outskirts of Richmond on the eastern side, and they start digging in. But then he noticed that McClellan had left an isolated portion of his force, about a quarter of his force, at Seven Pines. And so Joseph E. Johnston came up with the idea of concentrating most of his force against a smaller force of the enemy. And that's how you win battles. You concentrate more of your men against a smaller portion of their men, and that's how you win.
Where is Seven Pines?
The numbers. And Seven Pines is almost directly east of Richmond before you get to the Chickahominy. So it's on the Richmond side of the Chickahominy River and swamp. And that's what made it so important, is the fact that it was so marshy. You could only cross the Chickahominy in a few places. So those men really were kind of isolated by themselves. It was a mistake that McClellan had made on his advance to Richmond. Now, the importance in this fight, it's kind of a seesaw battle. There's a lot of confusion early on. It's the first really big battle in Virginia. It's a lot bigger than First Manassas, probably twice the size of First Manassas, 35, 40,000 men engaged on either side in this battle. It's a really good sized battle. The fighting was very confused early on. There's a lot of confusion over the Confederate orders, and so too many troops are trying to move down one road. They get held up. It's a big mess. But the main importance of Seven Pines is the fact that in the fighting over the 2 days, Joseph E. Johnston is wounded. So this is the importance of the Battle of Seven Pines. He's wounded.
And in comes Robert E. Lee.
And the military advisor to Jefferson Davis gets put in, Robert E. Lee. And so from that moment, you mark the beginning of Robert E. Lee's tenure as commander of that army. And he names the army, prophetically, the Army of Northern Virginia, giving you an idea of where he intends to spend most of his time fighting with that army, not around Richmond.
So they push back the Peninsula campaign to come up from, you know, down around Williamsburg to Richmond. That's they stopped that, right?
Right. So that stopped that advance towards Richmond, and they were close enough that, and this has been said many, many times, that the federal officers could set their pocket watches by the ringing of the church towers in Richmond. They were that close. They could hear the church bells going
off. How about
off.
The troops coming down from Northern Virginia, that 50,000?
Okay, so this is the Battle of Seven Pines. We're going to get to those a little bit later, and what happens because they're coming down. They only got to Fredericksburg, but we'll get more into that story as we actually get into the 7 days battles.
Rick Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com. We are exploring the most significant battles of the Civil War here in Virginia, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week
as we
continue down our list.
All right.
Thank you, Rick Britton.
Yeah, thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.